how are you doing? Only one person's doing okay. The rest of you don't know.
Does not registered well count?
That counts. All right. If you will be opening your Bibles to the latter part of John chapter 8, we've got just one or two little things we want to finish up in John 8. And then we're going to move right into some more healings and some more disputes and maybe some divisions even among the Pharisees. But I know I have not specifically done much with the workbook as of late, but if you are keeping track and doing the workbook, this is actually lesson 11, and that puts us almost exactly halfway through the workbook, so we are staying more on track than you might be led to believe. And some of the really heavy, weighty, theological, difficult discussions have already taken place. I'm not saying there's nothing important in the rest, but it moves a little bit faster when we get here. And to just set the scene, because it's so important, when we start John chapter 7, right at verse 1, keep in mind that we are approximately 6 months from the crucifixion. So we see, as things are now kind of more coming to a close, we see some different kinds of things happening. But if you remember, in John chapter 8, we have the incident of a woman caught in adultery being brought to Jesus, and he told the accusers, whoever's without sin, throw the first stone. They slowly all left. He had the discussion with the woman and told her to go and sin no more. Then we have this, to me, somewhat not confusing, but difficult to maybe follow all of these discussions that Jesus has with, sometimes it's just general followers, sometimes some of the religious leaders are there, and he tells them over and over and over again, I'm the Christ, in pretty, you know, uncertain terms. I am the Christ. And they just continue to have this headbutting with the religious leaders and Jesus. One person I read said that the reason there's so much headbutting is you got right on one side, wrong on one side, and they just don't come together. It's almost like oil and water. You know, they don't mix sometimes. But in chapter 8, verse 51, let's start there. Most assuredly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my words, he will never see death. Based upon that statement in its context, the religious leaders come at him again. Verse 52, then the Jews said to him, now we know that you have a demon. Abraham is dead and the prophets, and you say, if anyone keeps my words, he shall never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who is dead and the prophets are dead? Who do you make yourself out to be? You know, we got two pretty clear positions here. And how would you summarize what the Jews are saying to him? In verse 51, he says, if you keep my words, you will never see death. And then where do they go? The opposition. Yeah. And what's their argument?
Who do you think you are? Greater than,
yeah. Just who do you think you are? Abraham is dead. The prophets are dead. And you're telling us if we abide in your words, we're never going to die. Now, they still have this misconception, physical versus spiritual, but that's what they're looking at, and they're saying, are you greater than Abraham? Are you greater than the prophets? Who do you make yourself out to be? And then Jesus responds. Jesus answered, verse 54, if I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father who honors me, of whom you say he is your God. Who does Jesus say his Father is?
God.
Yeah. So let's make it clear. He says that. Verse 55, yet you have not known him, but I know him, and if I say I do not know him, I shall be a liar like you, but I do know him and keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Then the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham? ? Jesus said to them, most assuredly I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. All right. So in the end of verse 53, who do you make yourself out to be? Tell us again, who are you? And Jesus tells them, I am here because the Father honors me. My Father honors me. And my Father is the God that you worship. Now, they would immediately know, you know, Yahweh. That's who we worship. That's who Abraham worshiped. That's who the prophets came from. And Jesus, in no uncertain terms, tells them, that's my Father. But then, in verse 56, they lose this. Your father, Abraham, rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Tell me what you think verse 56 means. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it. Is Abraham alive right now, physically? How's that? Okay. Where do we start out in John 1? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. Okay. When Jesus says in verse 58, most assuredly I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. What is he saying that would really drive these people nuts? Okay. And by borrowing that term, I am, what is he saying?
God.
Okay. And I hearken that back to John 1 because that is a very good summary of what he's saying right here. John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and what? And the Word was God. Okay? So now we're coming back to here when he's talking to these people. And in verse 59, then they took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. So this one ended up again in this... they just don't mix, you know. And if Jesus was not God, the stoning would have been appropriate. right? He would have been blaspheming, "I am God." And so there's just this still this tension that's there. And I'm thinking verse 9, chapter 9, we're not given exact terminology or dating as to when chapter 9 passes. I am kind of the belief that this is a continuation of chapter 8, because it ends up there in verse 59, going through the midst of them and so pass by. In verse 1 of chapter 9, now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. Okay. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" What's the basis of that question? Can you think of any particular, another instance of this people thinking cause and effect? I'm thinking about a whole book. Job. You know, what is Job's, and I really believe they were friends. Some people call that sarcastically. I think they were friends. They were just wrong about some things. They came to sit with their friend Job. What did they all tell him, essentially? Why was he having bad things happen to him? I mean, really bad things happen to him. Yeah. Job, what have you done? God knows. That's why you're getting punished. Repent. Verse 3, I think, is really important for us to grasp. Jesus answered, "Neither did this man nor his parents sin, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of those who sent me while it is day, and night is coming when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." There's not always a cause and effect. I can see situations that, you know, a mother, while she's pregnant, takes some sort of illicit drug. You know, we have children born every day across the nation that are already addicted to heroin or something because the mother was. I'm like Bill, I'm stumped at how the child sinned. There's a lot of different thoughts about that. They're not of any interest to me about what they're saying, because Jesus told us, Jesus says, neither did this man nor did his parents sin. Why did Jesus say that man was there? I would classify this maybe just a very generic term, because we don't maybe know all the ins and outs, but whatever the reason the man was blind and he was there, here's an opportunity. And in verse 4, "I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work." Does that have any meaning to us here, where we are chronologically? What do we start out saying? Chapter 7 starts what? Yeah, 6 months from the cross. You know, we've read, I didn't keep account of how many times, something didn't happen to Jesus because his time had not yet come. Jesus didn't do something because it was not yet his time. It's getting close for that. And then as long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. How is that term appropriate to what we're introduced to? What's the condition of this man? He's blind. Okay, and Jesus, just like he is going to give sight to this blind man, he can give vision, he can give sight to us as well, to those who believe and to those who follow. We've had this fight all along, spiritual versus physical. We'll get a little more of that as this chapter goes on. In verse 6, when he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. How did Jesus heal this guy? That could be interpreted as a trick question, but it's not. Tell me physically what he did, and then how did he really heal him? This has been written in my Bible margin so long that I'm starting to think it's original with me, and I know it's not. But you kind of start thinking that way along the time. And I've just got noted here, and I honestly don't know where it came from. But it says, if God can use spit and dirt, he can use you. Think about what he did to make this man regain his sight. Oh me, I can't do anything for God. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. We sell short our Savior sometimes. Still, he'd have spit and dirt on his face. because there was still something required of him.
If you refuse to get yourself seven times in the door, that's at the same time.
But I want to do something great. Verse 8, therefore the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, is this not he who sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. So we have a division of people after they see this man that had been blind from birth. Some said, hey, that kind of looks like him. Is that him? Others said, nah, that's not him. He shows up and what does he say? Hey, it's me. Therefore they said to him, I think this is a fair question. How were your eyes opened? I saw you yesterday and you're blind. Verse 11, he answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and I received sight. Then they said to him, where is he? And he said, I do not know. They brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Okay, that's never good in what we've read so far. 14, now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. What's the Pharisaic position here? We hadn't quite read it yet, but what do you think it is? He made clay.
Which is a stretch.
I kind of lean that way too. Yeah. Okay. verse 15, then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, he put clay on my eyes, I washed and I see. This is, verse 16 is interesting in the chronological events we're having. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Let's stop there, and if you've read ahead, pretend that you haven't. This says some of the Pharisees, what's their argument about Jesus? And the conclusion would then be, what about Jesus then?
Well, he worked on Sabbath, you know. He was not God.
Yeah. He's not, this man is not from God because he's breaking God's law, is the argument. Okay. Then others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? What's their argument? The other part. Yeah. I hear you. But look, he just healed a blind man. You know, I don't know if we start to see, you know, some glimmer that's there, but I think intentionally, especially where we are in chronological sequence here, John kind of puts forth an argument right here for the readers. And even, you know, for us today, you kind of have to make up your own mind that this man cannot be from God because he's breaking the Sabbath. First of all, in this instance, it's because they said he made clay. Can you find anything in the Old Testament that specifically says that? No. I'll save you the trip. No. So what is it that would have making clay be work, then make that break the Sabbath? Where does that come from?
Men.
Okay. That's an interpretation. But some are going to say he's not from God because of this. But then others say, how can a man who is a sinner do these things? If you put those on the scales and you start to balance them, you get a kind of better understanding of what's going on here to understand this.
Was the purpose of the Sabbath said, you know, the seventh day to rest? That's all it was.
Yeah.
It didn't have a lot of rules, just rest.
Keep the Sabbath day holy.
Fields and all of those stuff. You know, don't exchange money and all. Don't do all those, you know, those things that have to do with regular life. It didn't say you couldn't save your ox out of a hole, or you couldn't, you know, you couldn't make a blind man see. There's nothing there.
But what about if a child is supposed to be circumcised on the eighth day and that's a Sabbath? So we've already had that. And he says, y'all don't have any problem with doing that. And in verse, let me go back and look at this. In chapter 7, around verse 30, you will remember that down in verse 32, the Pharisees heard the crowd murmuring these things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priest sent officers to take him. When the officers come back, they don't have him. And in verse 46, what do they say? No man ever spoke like this man. We have other instances which say he did not speak like other people. He spoke as one having authority. And many times Jesus has said, I don't speak my own words. I don't do my own things. Where does it come from? Comes from the Father. I do what I've seen. I say what I've heard. There's a division among the Pharisees. Some of them are having trouble reconciling all of this themselves. So, the end of verse 16, and there was a division among them. The Pharisees were, you know, debating this. Verse 17, they said to the blind man again, what do you say about him because he opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet.
That was his
conclusion. Yeah, I've just always been puzzled as why did the Pharisees ask him, what do you think about it? They could care less what this man thinks.
When Jesus sent him off to the pool, did he see him again?
It says he went and washed and came back.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can know that
he... Yeah. But I don't know if they're trying to pass the buck in verse 17, but we get a little bit of a glimpse when they bring the parents in. But they said to him, and he said, he is a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? What are the Pharisees hoping for? He's a fraud. You know, they would love to put an end to this right now. No, that's not our son. Our son was blind. This is not our son. You know, they brought in an imposter. They're hoping for some really easy way out that would put an end to this Jesus character. And they ask them, how then does he see? Verse 20, his parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. Okay, we know that. But by what means he now sees, we do not know, or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him, he will speak for himself. The next verse tells us a lot. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. How do you get fair discussion when if Alan doesn't agree with my position, you're out of here, okay? And Charlene doesn't agree, bye. And we're either left with people that only agree with my position or people that are going to keep their mouth shut and not argue with me, okay? So that was the prevalent thought we're not going to support our son in this right now because we're scared of this. Ask him. Let him tell you. He knows. We don't. Verse 24, so they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know this man is a sinner. How many times now have they had some discussion with this man. It's either two or three. I don't know if there is a separation between verse 13 when he came to them and then they talked to the parents. I don't know if he's still there or not. So that's either one or two times. And then we have 24. So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, "Give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner." What are they going to do with that? Remember, some of the Pharisees, the division, said, "He healed blind. How can a sinner do that?" Okay. So what does it seem like they're proposing here? Yeah, or let's just find a way. You know, the people have kind of said, "This is that blind guy, and now he sees." Well, let's be sure. Let's call the parents in. "Yeah, that's our son. He was blind. He sees now. We don't know what happened. You better ask him." So it seems as though give God the glory. However it happened, we know it was from God. Give God the glory, but this man, this Jesus guy, he is a sinner. Somehow, you know, there's this group of them that says, how can he be a sinner when he does this? And I don't know that they ever came to a satisfactory answer to that, but they're willing to say, let's just say God healed him. Leave this other guy out of the equation because he's a sinner. Maybe God used a sinner to heal him. Maybe they're answering their other counterparts that were there. He answered and said, "Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." "One thing I know." Then they said to him again, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" I'm not exactly sure right now if this guy is tired of them questioning him or he's getting a little fed up with them. I'm not sure. Verse 27, he answered them, "I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become one of his disciples?" That went over well, huh? That went over well. And I don't know. My thought is, we don't have in the formerly blind man, we don't have a 100% conviction of who Jesus is yet. That comes a little bit later in this chapter. But it seems like he's frustrated. Okay. What happened to you? Well, that doesn't make sense. So the guy must be a sinner. Call his mom and dad. "Yeah, that's him, and he was blind. Don't know how he sees. Ask him." "What? Tell us again. What happened? Tell us again. Tell us again. Say it our way. Say God did it. Do you also want to become his disciples?" Verse 28. Then they reviled him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from." The formerly blind man is not done yet. Verse 30, the man, this is the formerly blind man, answered and said to them, "Why? This is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes." You don't even know where the guy's from? Come on. Now, verse 31, "Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him." That sounds kind of like what this other division of the Pharisees were saying in verse 16, isn't it? Latter part of verse 16, others of the Pharisees said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And this blind man in verse 31, "Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him." Just because the Pharisees thought it and just because the blind man said it, that doesn't make it true, but it is a truth what he said. And you can look in 1 Peter 3:12, Proverbs 28:9, Proverbs 15:29. And we've had lessons on this before, sermons on this before. Does God hear the words of a sinner? He can hear them. Otherwise, we would never be able to communicate with God. So what does it mean when it says God doesn't hear sinners? What does that mean? He doesn't act upon it. He doesn't give power to them. In 32, "Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone open the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." John is putting forth a witness here that you kind of have to start to put yourself in the position of some of these people and decide, based on the evidence that's being presented, where do you fall? Do you fall in the group of the Pharisees that says, this guy's got to be a sinner, he's not following the law? Our interpretation of the law, but still, it's the law. Or how do you explain he does these things? And you know, we know this is not the only thing Jesus had done. What's another instance where he got in trouble on the Sabbath with the Pharisees? What did he do? Healed a man that was lame for 38 years. You know, this is not just the first instance of this. I would propose that one instance would be enough, but John said, "I'm going to give you more evidence, more evidence, more evidence." And verse 33 is kind of this litmus test. "If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered, and the Pharisees answered the man formerly blind and said to him, "You were completely born in sins, and you are teaching us." And what did they do? Okay. This is what they said they were going to do. If people don't agree with us, if people confess that he is the Christ, you're out of here. You've just lost it. You're out of here. All right.
It proves their spiritual lives.
Well, Jesus said, "As long as I'm here," verse 5, what is he? "As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Now, physically, is everyone blind? No. Spiritually, do you go through a period of blindness? These folks did. They're having to see things. All right, now with verse 35, remember the blind man's been cast out. Verse 35, Jesus heard. Somebody ring a bell. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." Then he said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshiped him. What took place here? What transition took place between the man and the position of Jesus in the man's eyes? Before this, who was Jesus to this man? Sorry? He's the man who healed him, right? He gave me sight. Okay?
He thought he was a prophet.
And Jesus had the question at the end of verse 35, "Do you believe in the Son of God?"
You said Son of God?
Yes.
When it says Son of Man.
Son of Man, yeah. Verse 36, the man answers and says, "Who is he that I may believe in him?" And Jesus says, "It's me." Then he said, "Lord, I believe," and he began to worship him. Okay. This is almost like, let's see. Well, I know what side of the page it's on. Well, I don't see it at the exact moment, but just a chapter or two ago when Jesus says, you might be my disciples, but now you can be my disciples indeed. There's another step beyond, just belief and mouthing and mental assent. There's something that has to be done. And then in verse 39, Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into the world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind." I didn't think we're supposed to judge people. Is that what this really is about? What is Jesus really saying here? You're trying. Go ahead.
He's trying to shift to the correct judgment, which is judgment based off of God's word, not our own.
Yeah. Look at the two differences he put. "I have come into this world that those who do not see may see." Who was that in this case? Who did not see but saw? The blind man was given sight, and then immediately above that, he worshiped Jesus after he became to understand that's the Son of God or Son of Man. And the other part is, "And that those who see may be made blind." Pharisees. They see. They have vision, but they don't understand that they're blind. But Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. I can give you this." 40, "Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, 'Are we blind also?'" Yeah. Short answer, yeah. "And Jesus said to them, 'If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say we are, therefore your sin remains.'" Bell just caught us, but I put a paraphrase there. You don't have an excuse. All right, next week. Y'all do mark we finished the whole chapter today, right? A little bit of another one.
Move on a little faster.